a Robert Half Company.
Talk Radio, 630 K House, 7:04 in the morning. You know, we've been talking a lot about asset forfeiture as Senator Laura Woods has a bill that would rein in the ability of police agencies to take people's stuff without filing charges. And joining me now to sort of have a conversation about why law enforcement needs this tool is DA George Brockler. Good morning, sir. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me back on again, man.
Well, no problem. I want to also a little bit later ask you about how things are going in jury selection in the trial that you're working on very diligently. But let's start with this conversation first, because you and I have a much different view of this, because I'm looking at it strictly from the perspective of people who are having their assets seized and then not having charges filed against them. And that to me is not right. And you had expressed some a different viewpoint with Greg, and I'm just curious. I want to let you sort of talk about why you believe asset forfeiture is a necessary tool for law enforcement and how that works.
Well, a couple things, and thank you for letting me do this. I would tell you that I don't think you and I are different on asset forfeiture and certainly the Bill of Rights. I listen to you in the morning when I'm driving into the courthouse, and I have to tell you that I find myself in agreement with most of what you say, and I'm not really that far off from what Senator Wood says. I think the problem is what we end up having in Colorado lately, and in part this is just a creature of the legislature that we have the way it's set up, is we find anecdotal problems elsewhere in the country, and we say, well, my goodness, we should address that here in Colorado. And you've seen that on a bunch of different laws. And even when you had Senator Wood, who I have great respect for, on your show, her biggest claims about look at the abuse of this was to reference a hotel that was seized on the East Coast, a case out of Philadelphia. There aren't really good examples here in the state of Colorado to use for that. And I even cite to you the article that was written by the Denver Post about the Parker couple. You know, a lot was left out of that article, including the fact that these were people that drove into Colorado from San Diego with $25,000 cash with the express purpose of buying marijuana to take back out to South Dakota. That you can't engage in that kind of practice. But nonetheless, the state was not the seizing agency in that. It was the federal government. So my starting off point is not different than yours, and that is I am extremely skeptical of a government that can step in and take someone's property without due process. And this then is the other narrative piece that I think is misleading to people, is that there's no due process. I think they picture cops driving along the road, they make a traffic stop, they smell weed, and then they seize the car. And it doesn't work like that. It's not even close. There is due process at every single step of the way, including the fact that warrants, the exact same kinds of warrants that have to be filed in a criminal case with the same standard, probable cause, just to seize the property, just to seize it. Then notice has to be given not just to the person from whom it was seized, but anyone that can be found that would have an interest in that case. There has to be notice provided. Then those people can contest the forfeiture, and all they have to do is file something electronically with the state court, and it automatically triggers a hearing where the entire burden is on the government to prove, and this is important, the standard is clear and convincing evidence. That's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's the standard that the law requires for the state to take people's children from them. So this is no small hurdle to overcome. So there's due process all along the way. What's interesting to me, though, is that 4 out of 5 seizures that take place, nobody ever even contests them because they are generally the ill-gotten fruit of crime, or they're used to support the criminal enterprise, and the person involved does not want to have a declaration that they're the owner of that property because they know it's tied to crime.
Well, so, let me throw this out to you, because I interviewed a guy in Florida some time ago, and I realized that this is from Florida, but I was in Florida, so that's why this is pertinent here. And he was going to buy a used car. He had $8,000. He was driving down from Georgia to meet a guy to buy a car, a guy who I got an email from, an email exchange that verified this guy's story. But his money was seized, And he went back and was told that all he had to do was go through this process. But he was told by his, you know, friends and neighbors that he had to have a lawyer to do it. Well, this guy, that $8,000 was all the money he had in the world. So he was deterred from the process because he was afraid. He didn't know if he was going to go in and they were going to arrest him. I mean, it sounds incredibly easy to say, well, there is due process and all you have to do is file this form and whatever. But even for people who are law abiding, who have gone through the process of having a law enforcement officer take their property unjustly, there is a certain amount of fear that is injected into that system. When you, and by the way, I'm not disagreeing that I'm sure that there are people who are involved in criminal activities that, you know, just will walk away from the money. But there's an element of fear for a lot of people, and I'm talking about law-abiding people, when dealing with the courts and the police and everything else, especially if they feel like, I've done nothing and they took my stuff, and what realistic, they're the cops. They're the cops. They have the government on their side, and here I can't afford a lawyer. How am I going to go get my stuff? I mean, it sounds, yes, there's due process, there's easy, but in my mind, and this is my issue, and perhaps you can address this part of it.
Sure.
If there's enough evidence or even a whiff of enough evidence to take someone's stuff, why not charge them with a crime? Because if you charge them with a crime, all bets are off. As far as I'm concerned, this is what should happen. And please tell me if this is not what happens.
Sure.
If someone is charged with a crime, say I bring in $25,000 and you know that I'm coming in to buy pot and you have people that are going to roll over on me and testify against me and you seize that $25,000, why don't you go ahead and file charges at the same time? Because at that moment, that money should go into holding separately, and then as that works its way through the criminal justice system, if I am found guilty, the money is then seized forever. But if I am found not guilty, then I get that money back, you know, and that's the thing. So why not just wait until charges are filed? And if there's enough evidence to take the stuff, why not just file charges at that moment?
There's a lot of good stuff to respond to in what you said there, and I appreciate it. First off, the fear of the system, I get that. We deal with it every day. But honestly, if you extend it out to its natural a conclusion, that applies to every traffic offense. To suggest that, hey, the police have accused me of speeding and, oh my gosh, it's the cops, I got to go along with what they say, that really kind of is rejected by the number of people that come to court every day to confess their charges, and they do, without attorneys. And that's on something small, like a traffic offense, not something big like, sweet mother of goodness, you've taken my $25,000 cash, which is mine, all mine, I got it legally, how dare you take that from me? So I get that, Mandy. It's a pretty simple process online, and you don't have to have an attorney to file it. And once it's filed, you now shift the weight of the world onto the government to come to court and prove that these things that they've taken, whatever it is, are either the product of ill-gotten gains, criminal activity, they're nuisance, public nuisance, and that kind of answers the other part of what you said, which is why not require every forfeiture to be hitched to a criminal conviction. And that's because we have public nuisance laws that require that allow things to be forfeited in those circumstances. And we do. Now, when I told you 4 out of 5 people don't contest these things, then it just goes through an administrative forfeiture process, and that goes the route it goes. The other 20%, the vast majority of those end up going through a hearing at which a court, a judge who isn't hired by the government, and I mean the state of Colorado or the federal government, a judge sits there and says, yep, I agree, you've achieved this super high hurdle of clear and convincing evidence that it's either contraband, that it's public nuisance, or in fact that it is tied to a criminal conviction, because many times this stuff will show up as evidence and it does not get forfeited until the case is over. The civil proceeding gets stayed until the criminal case is over. So, you know, a lot of what we do, and I appreciate your story about the guy from Florida, is we hear horror stories. And typically we hear horror stories from a weird vantage point that lacks one or two facts of consequence. And then we say, man, we don't want that to happen here in Colorado, and I appreciate that. Now, I'm not telling you the guy from Florida didn't get screwed by the system. I'm not telling you that because I know it happens despite our best efforts. That's just the way the world works, and we got to figure out a way to minimize the opportunity for that. But For you to tell me, this guy says, hey, I'm driving down to Florida to buy a used car. I've done nothing wrong. The police seize my money. I am all set to go to court, but I'm worried they're going to arrest me. For what?
Well, let me just say this. That's why I'm going to push back on your example of people coming in to fight traffic tickets, because when you get a speeding ticket, there are a lot of mitigating factors. You know, you think you're going to be able to go in. You're hoping the cop doesn't show up. But if you get a speeding ticket, there's no expectation that you're going to be arrested. In the case of the guy in Florida that I spoke with, the cops told him, hey, you know what? As long as you turn over your property, we're not going to press charges. Go ahead and sign away. He had to sign a waiver for his property. So here he felt like he had basically admitted to something, even though he wasn't charged with anything and nobody could tell him what he had allegedly done wrong. So the fear of being arrested when you go to traffic court is minimal. I mean, you have no expectation of being arrested at all in traffic court. And yet this guy who has to sign a waiver for his money, he was very concerned that the same people who said, we're going to take your money, and if you give it to us, we're not going to charge you with anything, we're going to be there to say, oh, now he wants his money back. Well, now we're going to charge him with something. And it's a different standard. That's all.
Well, there's an extra fact that we didn't have in the first part of the story.
Right.
And again, I don't know the answer to this. I can tell you that what happens in Florida doesn't happen in Colorado most of the time. We are different on a lot of levels, both good and bad. But I just don't like the idea that we have legislators on both sides of the aisle who look at bad things happening elsewhere and say, oh, my gosh, we need to end that here, without the first step of saying, let's look and see what the heck it is we do here. I mean, you had a senator on the committee, and you know that bill died last week. You probably heard about it.
I found out this weekend.
One of the senators who was on the committee who voted in favor of the bill said, we don't have any due process in Colorado for forfeitures. And I've just gone through a thumbnail sketch of the due process that exists. And it's better due process than you get for someone taking your driver's license and telling you you can't drive a car for 5 years. It's better due process than you get in some cases for the state taking your kids. So we do have due process. The issue is, where do we see this system failing Coloradans? And where we see it failing, is it a one-off, or is this a trend or something we need to address by legislation? And if we look into that and find that, then you're going to find me on your show touting that change in the law, because I don't want the man being able to show up to my neighbor's house or pull them over and take their stuff unless there is lawfully good reason to do so.
Can you hang on through a real quick break, and then we can continue this conversation? Because I want to get into, here's my concern for the state of Colorado, and I want to know how much of, you know, and I know obviously it differs from agency to agency, but I want to know how much of this, these asset forfeitures are now being budgeted, because that's a big area of concern for me. So we're going to continue our conversation with DA George Brockler right after this on Talk Radio 630 KHAL. Talk Radio 630 KHAL, we're talking with DA George Brockler about asset forfeiture. And, you know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, this is my concern, and this is the area where I think that asset forfeiture is potentially at risk for significant abuse. I'm going to put it that way. And that's when law enforcement agencies are budgeting asset forfeiture money for any reason, any kind of recurring expense. Now, I understand that asset forfeiture, you know, in my mind, if we're going to have it and agencies are going to benefit for it, it should be in the windfall category of, hey, we're going to have this money one time. What are we going to spend it with on one time? But as soon as you move that money into a recurring budgetary item, that's where I have a problem. What is the status of that now?
You've described the law as it is, Patty, which is it cannot be for a normal operating expense that would otherwise be budgeted out of your annual budget. It is a one-time, one-off expenditure. And so that you understand, too, and the listeners, too, when this money finally, after it goes through all these layers of due process, gets back to the agency, the agency is not free to just spend it how it chooses. There are forfeiture boards. The money is kept separately in different funds. The funds are accounted for differently, and there are forfeiture boards. I sit on them. I sit on the boards for the various agencies in the 18th Judicial District, and so do county commissioners, and so do other members of government that sit in and listen to, this is how, let's say, Chief John Jackson says, I want to spend money that I got off of a forfeiture. He doesn't just get to spend it. These people have to vote on that after having been given notice of it and the ability to inquire about it. I do the same thing. So, for instance, we have a very small amount of forfeiture funds. DA's offices don't typically get much, but we wanted to spend them on training. You can't spend it on personnel. You can't hire someone, and in part because that would be a recurring expense. We had one set of annual training we wanted to pay for. I got the board together, gave out notice that could show up. They all sit around. We had this conversation, and Dave Weaver, who at the time was the sheriff in Douglas County and now a county commissioner, who said, George, I appreciate it. Son, I need you to do me this year and then training like future. Yes, sir, of course. I mean, but my point is, there is real skepticism, even amongst people who have the ability to expend these funds, to make sure that they're spent limited purposes. One that I know I sat on a board when Grayson Robinson was sheriff and approved was they wanted to spend the funds to buy two brand-new upgraded, because the other ones were failing, ovens for the jail. I mean, this wasn't stuff like, hey, cops want to go get a helicopter.
Right.
This was stuff for the jail to make the inmate experience more, I guess, more palatable. And
right.
So, it was like tens of thousands of dollars, but we approved that. That's a one-time expenditure. I do not see them being budgeted. They aren't part of our budget. Anybody that asks, especially from the county commissioners, we update them on, look, here's the pool of money we have for forfeitures. And sometimes they ask questions about, why don't you spend this for that? And again, we're limited in what we can spend the money on. I do. What I appreciate about your show, Mandy, is I don't think people know anything about what I just said about due process or how the funds get spent. I think a lot of folks out there think that the cops show up, take something, auction it, and then they're out buying barbecues for the team, you know, or something.
Well, I'm actually less worried about the concept of them buying barbecues for the team than I am about them putting it into that recurring category, because then there becomes a pressure. You know, if you are counting on that asset forfeiture money for something, anything, and you know, as something that you need for your department, and I'm talking about basic necessities, that to me would incentivize those forfeitures. And that's where you start to move in a direction that makes me very, very uncomfortable. You know, it really does. I'm you know, against anything that sort of assumes guilt instead of assuming innocence. And that's what this feels like. Really, at its core, for me, that's the issue here, is that asset forfeiture without charges feels like it's assuming guilt. And maybe we're talking about guilty people here, okay? I get that. I understand that guilty people do bad things and they benefit from it. But at the same time, I just wish that we could say, we're going to file charges before we go ahead and seize anybody's assets. And I still don't quite understand why that can't go first.
That is the vast majority, if not every case that we have. I mean, the things that people are concerned about are things of the past or not from here. For instance, the people we talked about from Parker, who came into Colorado with $25,000 of cash with the express purpose of purchasing marijuana to take back to South Dakota. That was not seized under local law. That was seized under a practice that Eric Holder ended through his memo, I don't know, a month or two ago, the one that was this adoptive practice where locals could seize a vehicle or some property. They call in the feds. The feds would come in and then actually effectuate the seizure.
Right.
And then the department, we can't do that anymore. That's not lawful to do anymore. But that wasn't under state law, and it couldn't be fixed by the process that Senator Woods was pitching. One thing, though, that even though it's not a budgeted recurring expenditure, I can tell you that the drug task forces that exist in the state to try to crack some of these larger enterprises, they don't budget for it, but the funds that they do get in a large way sort of allow them to continue their practices and to do the things moving forward they need to do to be effective. For instance, these listening rooms for wiretaps, those expenditures are millions of dollars for things like that. They can use funds to then make a one-time purchase for those things, and now they're able to get up on wires for these drug cartels that you and I both know are operating pretty freely right now in the state of Colorado in order to make some big busts. And that's just one example. But if you take away the forfeitures from those task forces, they're going to go away, because the only alternative is these chiefs of police, these sheriffs, show up to the county commissioner, show up to the municipalities and say, we need a heck of a lot more money because we can't use the bad guys' money anymore to help us to fight them. And then the community is going to go, I don't know if we want to spend on that. And then the drugs go crazy. So, I mean, that's just one small
example. Yeah, but see, that's kind of what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, okay, if we don't have these forfeitures, then our drug task force goes away. That's exactly the kind of incentive that I'm worried about. And I'm not leveling any accusations at any law enforcement agency, but that is exactly where my concern is. And you just detailed it perfectly. Real quick, because we're almost out of time, I've got to ask you about how the trial is going, how the jury selection is going for the Aurora theater shooter. What's the latest on that?
Well, without getting into the substance of the case, it's all public knowledge stuff. We are going much more quickly than the court or any of the parties anticipated. You know, the judge had early on said, listen, I'm going to budget 16 weeks for individual voir dire. And to meet the goal of 120 to 150 jurors that we want to have before we get into the normal general voir dire that people might think of for jury selection, we have to average about 1.6 jurors a day. And that would put us, somewhere about 13 or 14 for the number of days we've been in thus far, maybe 15. We're almost tripled. We're at about 42 right now. And so that pace is such that instead of doing opening statements in June, I think there's a very good chance at this pace we would do them in April.
Oh,
so
good.
The case is picking up some momentum. Yeah.
Well, obviously, this is going to be a hotly watched and discussed case, and I hope that we can continue to talk to you about it as the case works its way through. I really appreciate you making time. I'm not sure that we're in agreement. I understand everything you just said. I get it. But, and you knew there was a but coming. I still have some discomfort. I still have some, I don't know if I'm ever going to be truly happy about it, but it is what it is.
Listen,
and
I don't want you to be comfortable with government forfeiture of people's private property. I don't think anybody ought to go, oh, well, George just talked, enough said, I'm going to go to sleep without thinking about this again. I don't think that should be the case. I think you and everyone listening should continue to be incredibly skeptical of a government that has the ability to take private property. But look into the procedure, and where there is error, where there is weakness, let's fix that. Let's not blow up the bridge because one of the handrails is loose. You know what I mean? Let's figure out how to fix it.
I will earn agreeance on that. DA George Brockler, I appreciate your time this morning.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon.
No problem. We'll talk again soon. We'll be back.